Good evening. I'm Susan Curry. I'm the director of the Tompkins County Public Library. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to talk with you this evening about the library's 2012 budget. Listening to the discussion here, we understand the extremely difficult economic situation, and we appreciate the work of the county legislature and the county administrator's office. So my presentation is quick, about 15 minutes. It covers a quick review of our budget, our over-target requests, the impact, and some of the key measurements. So this slide is our recommended budget, but includes some information on last year's budget as well as the proposed 2012 budget. Just a few words about some of the details of this. Last year, the 2011 budget was balanced, as it was in 2010, by not filling vacant positions and by drawing heavily from the library's fund balance. We also had a one-time special gift to help defray some of the deficit. Like everyone, since the economic downturn in 2008, the library has seen an erosion of revenues and an increase in health and pension costs. And I would just note that the library pays 100% of the health and pension costs for that agency. So as I prepared this budget and I made the, sent in the over-target requests, I reflected on the library and the place in the community. And I've been the library director just under 2 years, but I've been a 31-year county resident. I'm absolutely astounded at the use of this library and the love that the community has for the library. In these tough economic times, one of the things we see is an increased demand for library services. We anticipate a number of retirements this coming year. In fact, we just had one submitted a month ago. With these retirements, we will have only one full-time professional librarian in youth services, which is one of our busiest departments. And I just wanted to point that out as one of the effects is the loss of FTEs here. If you're wondering about the other revenues, we do get revenues from the city, some from the town. We get revenues from the state through the Finger Lakes Library System. And we do get revenues from private donations from the Friends of the Library and the Tompkins County Public Library, Public Foundation. So the over-target requests that are supported by the tax cap, we're very appreciative of these. What I'd like to do is explain maintenance of effort. This is something that the library has to deal with every year. It's maintenance of effort. Public libraries are governed by New York State education law regarding funding and other regulations. Each part of New York has a system that provides services to all of the public libraries within the assigned counties. We're the central library or the main library for the Finger Lakes Library System. It covers 5 counties and 33 libraries. As a central library, we're bound by maintenance of effort. It's a component of New York State Education Law, Section 272. Failure of maintenance of effort is determined by local funding falling below 95% of the average appropriation from the last 2 years. It results in an additional cut of 25% for us as a central library, but also an additional 25% cut for the library system. So in effect, it's a 25% cut for all 33 libraries, as well as including the Tompkins County libraries. One of the busiest services we have as central library is resource sharing, something we do very well. And in 2010, we loaned more than 50,000 items to all of the libraries in the Finger Lakes Library System. The request for the over-target amount for technology, I don't think I need to tell anybody in this room what a fast-moving target technology is these days. Technology is at the very core of the service that the library provides. So we provide service for the most basic needs, such as creating email, but we also help people who have all the latest devices. And we have seen an increase in the need for navigation of technology and digital resources. So among some of the services we provide, the reason we're asking for this is we help people navigate online job applications. We're actually the specific location given by a number of local businesses to apply for jobs online. We are constantly asked for help updating and downloading cell phone software and applications. We help people set up and navigate their online banking, which was a surprise to me this year to learn. People come in, of course, for medical and health information sites, help with immigration forms, locating tax forms and instructions. Not to mention that we distributed over 16,850 printed tax forms this year because they are no longer mailed. So with technology rapidly changing, we must keep up in order to serve our community. So we've obviously reached the tipping point these days where technology is driving the format of information. This past June, our internet usage was up 6% over last year. And so far in 2011, we've seen more than 15,000 hours of wireless laptop and other devices used in the library. So having updated technology is critical for our community, in addition to the maintenance of effort, which is actually something that we're required by law to do. So the agency at Tax Cap, this is a description of how we would be affected at Tax Cap. I'm a positive person. I really tried hard to put as much of a positive spin on things because the library is this wonderful place where everybody is incredibly dedicated. But very concerned about core services because of the loss of staff. I mentioned this earlier. And reduced staff means that our core services are affected in the areas listed on this slide. For a public library, you cannot separate services from staff. The staff deliver the services. One of the most important mandates of public libraries is to support literacy and education. And the library has multiple programs in support of literacy for all ages. Last year, we had a 52% increase in summer reading program registration. We had more than 100% participation by teens. And we are the primary library for homeschoolers, and there are over 200 alone in Ithaca. For local charter schools, but we're really a teacher resource and homework help for all of the local schools and students. So youth services, we would see a significant reduction in the hours at the youth services reference desk, which means less help with reading, research, and homework. We will have significant reductions in the reading programs, such as the variety, we have a wide variety of story times and literacy programs each week. In addition, we collaborate with many other organizations and providing staff to support some of these outreach programs, such as the summer reading program and Kids Discover the Trail would be strained, be very difficult. But education and literacy is not, it's not restricted to youth alone. We've seen a 200% increase in test proctoring. This is a service that we provide for people looking for job advancement, people who are returning to work, and people who are finishing degrees. We've seen a 15% increase in the use of adult literacy materials and more than a 50% increase in the use of English as a second language and language learning materials. With the continued loss of reference librarians, we'll see longer waiting times at the reference desk and fewer available staff to help people navigating research and online resources will result in fewer patrons served. And we see many people who are not coming in, as I said earlier, they're coming in for help with job applications, medical and health information, and many people just not understanding the fast-paced changes in technology. At circulation, fewer staff means longer lines waiting for materials to check out materials, but also helping with locate materials. And it will take longer to get materials returned to the shelves more quickly so that there's easy access. I will say that the staff have worked very hard. They're cross-trained. They support each other. They're not isolated. They've worked with me to try to work across all departments as much as possible. At this point, they are strained to their stretched to their utmost limit. We're at a point where when one person's out, something doesn't get done or a desk is not staffed. And the vacancies are due to retirements, thankfully. The need to meet the deficit means we're not able to fill the positions in a very busy library. The other impact is that we'll not be able to get materials to the shelves as quickly. I will also note that we have seen an 18% reduction in the materials added to the collection in 2010, At this point, the library collection is completely privately funded. The request for materials will increase with longer waiting times for patrons and longer for patrons from the Tompkins County libraries who request material from the library. We've already seen a 13% increase in the numbers of requests, and this is due to not being able to purchase as much material. That includes online, by the way, because we do have downloadable books, which allows for one patron at a time, and you can place holds for those. The library will have fewer hours. In addition to the maintenance of effort law, central libraries have a number of other mandated state requirements. One is the number of hours required as the central library, and the other is the number of hours based on the current population of the county. So as central library for the Finger Lakes system, we are never allowed to go below 55 hours a week. With the level of population, according to the 2010 census, we're now required to be open 60 hours a week. But with the current levels of staffing in 2012, we will not be able to do that. We will request a waiver. So in summarizing the impact from this slide, I'd like to just share with you the use of the library on an unusual day. And this would be Thursday, September 8th, when we had the flooding. We had a delayed opening at the library because the county roads were closed and many of the staff live outside of Ithaca. But they all made it in. And when we did open the doors, we had a crowd of almost 70 people crammed under that little overhang, you know, to be out of the rain. And they stampeded their way into the library to get to the computers, and we had a waiting line there for most of the day. The entire library was completely packed, particularly the children's area because schools were closed as well. The over-target requests above the cap, I talked about the critical state of staffing. Overall staffing levels for the library have been affected in all areas, but the greatest need in 2012 will be in youth services. So if we are given the over-target request of $100,000, that will go directly for staff and youth services and a position to support the collection. I described earlier the services that are provided by the Youth Services Department and the impact they have. I want to mention again that in 2012, the head of that department will be retiring. We're not able to replace her. We'll have one full-time youth services librarian. This is a department that in the past 10 years has seen an approximately 300% increase in children's attendance at programs supporting literacy. It was a beautiful new library, and so we did really well in terms of getting these wonderful literacy programs in place, and the attendance is very heavy. There's an area outside the program room that's called the baby stroller parking lot. It's crowded with baby strollers every week when there's a baby story time. But we do have strategies because we understand what is happening. And this is a summary of the strategies that Tompkins County Public Library will employ in 2012. I think it's important to mention that the development of these strategies has involved all of the library staff. They've worked very closely with me, as well as the library trustees. They reflect an understanding and a commitment to service. The tough economy strains our budget, but not our commitment to the community who needs this more during tough times. We understand the tough economy as an institution and as individuals. But the library contributes to the overall safety net of our most vulnerable citizens by supporting literacy and education. We contribute to the economy by helping with employment searching. And beyond this is something I believe with all my heart, public libraries are one of the most wonderful examples of democracy. Our founders understood and supported the idea that a healthy democracy ensures equal opportunities for all citizens to have access to resources to improve their lives. The last slide I have are some key measurements. Beyond the essential services, this is a heavily used library. The sheer number of people using the facility, the collections and the services, are an indication of need and appreciation. I also want to note that anyone who comes into the library has a purpose and a need. They make a conscious choice to come there. We're often the only place open during extremely bad weather. You may have heard me talk last year about the increased use of the library on cold winter days, even when we have to open late or close early. So I won't read you all of these key measurements, but I will note one significant set of numbers. As of August 31st, and counting the number of website visits, database usage, digital collections use, and all of the ways that our community connects with the library online, the number is actually a staggering 705,661 connections. We will have 1 million connections online by the end of 2011. This includes everything outside and inside the library use of the resources. This doesn't include the close to 400,000 physical visits that we anticipate having. So the library clearly has a significant impact in our community. Thank you for the opportunity to present this information to you. I've seen your schedule. I'm sorry, but I want to say we very much appreciate the support of the legislature and all the work that all of you do, as well as the county administration.
Questions for the director. Brian, I had Brian over here. Will, Carol, Peter.
Thanks, and I'm glad that just a few minutes ago you mentioned democracy. I don't know how that fits in with the maintenance of effort mandate or the hours or anything like that, but that's fine.
Yes, something imposed on us. It was a law set up in 1958, New York State education law.
No, I know. You mentioned the 33 libraries. Mm-hmm. Where are they generally?
The five counties that are contiguous to Tompkins County, so Tioga.
Okay. I know what those are. We are responsible for the maintenance of effort, or are all
every county. Okay. Every county is responsible for maintenance of effort for the Finger Lakes Library System and the libraries in their area.
Okay, thanks.
That was something, actually, it was a great question. I had that question last year because
I asked it last year.
You did, and one of the things is that...
You can ask it next year, right?
Well, one of the things is that the only thing I asked for last year was the amount for required for this maintenance of effort. And I went to Finger Lakes to ask our legislature approve this amount. I wanted to make sure that all the other counties were also providing maintenance of effort and that it wasn't just our county legislature who had a very difficult position. It was a tough budget year last year, too. Mm-hmm. So the fact that we were given the maintenance of effort, I wanted to make sure that other counties were also required to do that, and they are every year.
Okay.
Will.
Susan, I understood that you're going to be applying for a waiver on the number of
60 hours a week. We cannot go below 55 hours a week, and I am working with the staff to figure out how we make sure we do that. If you go below 55 hours a week, there are all kinds of
bad things happen. So you anticipate staying open 60?
55.
I'm sorry. And we should be, according to the state regs, 60. Is that correct?
We should be at 60. We'll have to request a maintenance a waiver for that particular requirement.
And does your OTR on Sunday hours help?
It would help.
But not
that.
Enough. But it will still need the waiver.
With the 20,000 for Sunday hours,
yeah,
I'd have to do some maneuvering to see if we could figure that out. I don't believe it does cover the entire 60 hours needed.
And
part of this is because of where we're seeing the retirements in the library. When I started the library, looking at the number of anticipated retirements, we have some significant retirements that started last year, and they coincided with some bad budget years. That's a way to meet the deficit without having to do layoffs, which we have managed to avoid. Unfortunately, they are falling in the area of the professional librarians. And so, that 60 hours, we still are required to have a librarian on duty at all times that the library is open. So that's where I would need to see how could we, and that's where I'm not sure we would be able to meet the 60 hours.
Okay. And I would hope you could have a library on duty.
Yes,
it just
we
makes
one.
Common sense that you should. Final question. I was a little confused on your strategies where you said identify and capture personnel savings due to staff who are out on medical.
Yes. We have had a few staff who have had medical issues, and so they have gone on leave, sometimes leave without pay, mm-hmm. and we capture that salary savings.
Thank you.
Carol.
Yeah, on the Sunday hours?
Yes.
How many hours on Sunday would that cover, and how does that compare to?
Well, let's put it this way. Right now we get $20,000 a year from the town for Sundays, and that same amount from the Friends of the Library. And we had, I think the county had a number of years ago, allocated some of that same amount for Sunday, so that would have gone for the Sunday. So it's a third of the Sundays that were open. The way the library schedule works right now is 33 Sundays. We're open 33 Sundays based on a careful study of usage. So what we're doing right now is looking at if we only have and every year we have to go to the town and ask for that amount. To support Sunday hours, so we're never guaranteed of that amount. So what we would do with the amount of money we have is we would do a careful look at what Sundays, where are the greatest numbers of people on Sundays. So we're looking at that.
So
33 yeah. Sundays is the normal number of Sundays open per year.
The extensive discussion that we had one year about Sunday hours and how important they were.
They are.
May have preceded Joe, too.
Yeah, I think so.
As somebody who, it has gone through major periods of my life where Sunday was the only day
I know.
That I could get to the library. As working parents who
I know.
Can't get there any other time. This legislature had asked the library, and I think it had been built in, that was the last thing we wanted to see come to us as an over-target request out of mm-hmm. a $2 million budget. That mm-hmm. that $20,000, could that be in the base budget,
It was added to the base budget, but what's happened is the gradual erosion of the budget over years is what's affecting that.
Right.
And I'll tell you, I think the library should be open Sunday. I think the library should be open 7 days a week. We're just not able to, and so one of the things we did is sit down. But there's no day that the library is not busy. I have people ask me, can you substitute Mondays instead? Mondays are one of the busiest days we have, even more than Sundays. So we literally sat with all of the statistics for every single day for the year to figure out what is the least impact. It's not that it's not an important day. We had to base our decision on when we would have the least impact on the fewest number of people. And it turns out to be Sundays, for example, in December. So it's not that people don't use the library. It's that when we have to make a decision of where do we put the staff, we're going to try to find the Sundays where we have the highest use and put the money to support Sundays toward those Sundays.
Okay, thank you.
Peter.
A couple of questions. One, I have a little trouble with this business of having to be open all the time, and I just wonder in my mind if you closed on Sunday, are you absolutely sure that you would lower your usage? Would people adapt to Saturday or a weekday, and it would obviously inconvenience them, but would it really result in less use of the library? That's question number one. And question number two is, you had a slide that I didn't quite understand. If I read it right, you said that there was a reduction on FTEs of, 6% in 1910, 5% in 2010, 5% in 2011, and anticipated 11% in 2012. And that was under, I think what you said is that was with the staying within the tax cap.
Mm-hmm.
And then you said that staying within the tax cap satisfied the maintenance of effort provision, and that confused me. Sorry, Frank. I didn't understand that because that sounds like it's a reduction of 22% in that 3-year period. How can that possibly be within the maintenance of effort?
The 11% reduction in staff is a cumulative.
Oh, that was the cumulative.
Yep.
Okay, all right.
The maintenance of effort is strictly the formula that is used by that maintenance of effort law. And it's with respect only to the formula for funding from the local funding source, in this case from the county. So that funding source, that formula is always in effect, and it is always that the local funding cannot fall below 95% of the average of the last 2 years.
Oh, okay. And what about the Sunday, my Sunday?
So now ask me again about the Sundays. What was that question about? Oh, why, could you change it to another day? Is that really?
No, I'm just saying, are you sure that if you were to close on Sunday that people would not adjust to that and that the total usage of the library would not be diminished?
Well, I think that any time you close a day, you're going to have diminished use because people aren't in checking materials out and using the building, and those are all key measurements, numbers of visits that were required. By the way, the New York State Library requires us to have an annual report and report these statistics. So if you're not open Sundays, you're going to have a reduction in some of your measurements, such as checkouts and people visiting. I will say the library is open all the time because we're open online. And so what we have this balance between people who have access to all of the library's online resources and those people who do not, and it's the people who do not who will be affected.
Mike.
Actually, I didn't have my hand up. I'll just ask a question.
I must be seeing things. Martha and then Frank.
Susan, I think when we did the budget presentation at the library, you mentioned the waiver. I thought you said then that it was you get a waiver for 1 year.
It's 2 years.
Okay, two
you
years,
get a
and
waiver
then
for
after that, then we'd be expected to go.
There's an expectation of a plan of how the hours would be restored.
Okay,
so we have a little bit of time to look at that.
Do you expect that we'll get that waiver?
For 60 hours, yes.
Okay.
We would not get a waiver below 55.
Sunday hours. Are not funded at all in the higher budget, correct?
That's correct.
So right now that's 33, this year 33 Sundays are covered. So how many Sundays will it go down to?
You'd lose a third of the Sundays.
It'll go down to 22 Sundays?
Something like that.
Okay. And I realize that I started looking for your staff roster, and I realized, in the agency budget section, most of them don't have a staff roster. ITCTC does. I think it's one staff. Anyway, there's one here with one staff. Is it possible to get a roster and,
sure,
and not necessarily every position, but it'd be great to see how many over the years?
I tell you, when the library opened at this present location, there were 55 FTE.
And how many now?
I have to look back at the first slide. We're at 44.
All right. Thank you very much.
Frank.
Thank you.
Susan, the question about the state funding and how reliable that is, what's your best guess about the reliability? And if they're going to reduce it, it won't be just based on hours. They can reduce it for other items, too. Can you say something about that?
And then
I have one comment about the Sunday hours.
Okay. We have to separate the maintenance of effort formula from the hours. They're two completely separate things. The maintenance of effort formula is strictly a New York State law that says our funding has to be, from the local funding source, has to be at this level. That's the one that says can't fall below 95%. And that really has nothing to do with the hours. Then there's a state requirement for central libraries, for public library systems, that must always be at 55 hours. So they're separate. So, and then there's the hours based on the population.
And because of the increase in the census, our requirement went up. I want to go back to something Peter was asking about Sunday hours. Several years ago, your predecessor, when Janet Steiner was there, we did a study about the Sunday hours, and it was the precursor to the year when I think a private individual helped fund some of the Sunday hours. What was found was that there's a different population. A lot of the same people use the library on Sunday, but there's an increase in a different segment of the population that can only use the library on a Sunday. And that was a little bit telling. I don't know where that
Well, I will look for that. That's a very useful piece of information.
I remember that, and it was justification for, or one of the items that helped justify the Sunday hours.
Thanks, that's what I was looking for.
Yeah, I will say that this was an area of great discussion. It is not something that we undertake lightly. As a librarian, the libraries exist to provide information. It is very hard to think about, when I walk through that library every day, the things that I see, it's very hard to think about not being open. So it's not something that we will undertake lightly. We'll try to be extremely strategic in terms of which Sundays. We spent a lot of time looking at statistics. But I also want to look for the study that you mentioned, too, as well. I think that'll be very helpful.
Mike.
The state has a mandate commission looking at mandates that we have where they can relieve us without having to spend money. Wondered if we ought to bring to their attention this 55-hour requirement as to a mandate that perhaps doesn't need to be enforced, or the 60-hour requirement, maybe now with the change in our population. I assume we wouldn't want to suggest that they change the maintenance of effort because they're putting some money into that.
I hope not. I don't know. I think that would be something for this body to discuss and decide to take up with Albany.
Thank you very much, Susan.
How about if we do the health department next?
You have 8 minutes.
No problem. All right. Well, good evening. Is this on? Can you hear me? Yeah, you can all hear me. Okay. Good evening. Frank Krupa, Public Health Director. This is my first time, so be gentle, please. We've got some slides that we'll run through for you to talk about our budget. How do we get it? Kevin broke it. He's not here. He can't defend himself. Am I down to 4 minutes?
No, I got six.
Okay. All right. We're up and running. Good. Well, eventually that'll hopefully time off there. But hit a button. Okay, good. Here we go. Starting over. Frank Krupa, Public Health Director. We wanted to start out talking a little bit about our mandates within the in our budget this year. I think you've heard Joe talk a little bit about some of the positive news that's come out of our mandated programs, specifically our Children with Special Care Needs pre-K program. And what you'll see up there is a negative change of a little over $500,000, and that is related to less dollars being required to run our pre-K program within our Children with Special Care Needs division. We came about that through some different avenues. It wasn't all one thing, and it's not some miracle of math that we've done here. The staff took a long, hard look at the work that they were doing, and they were able to find some savings. The first thing, some of you that have been here a while, certainly longer than I have, will remember back about 5 or 6 years, the health department had to come and ask for additional dollars for this particular program because we had under-budgeted. And so over time, we've been working to build up the request each year, and we finally got to a point where things have stabilized for us. So we've been able to see a couple of years of consistent trend, so we were comfortable in reducing that dollar amount a little bit because of that discovery within the trend and stabilizing our needs. Secondly, one of the best things about this is we're seeing prevention working. You're all aware that we have an early intervention program that is also a mandate, and staff puts a lot of effort and a lot of work to getting to the children early. The early intervention deals with the children 0 to 3. Pre-K then takes them from 3 to 5. And so those prevention efforts are starting to show up by providing those services early on, getting the children started, getting their needs met. By the time they get to preschool, we're starting to see a decrease in their overall needs. And so that's savings for us. That's number two. And then number three, recently we've been able to enter into a contract with our partner at Ithaca City School Districts to handle the transportation needs for our preschool children. And so that is going to save us what we think is about $150,000 over this school year in transportation costs because they have the infrastructure in place and are able to do it at a significantly reduced cost compared to what we were paying the private provider. So that's what gets us to this number and gives us that positive news as far as our mandates in that particular program. Our revenues, it's a bit of a misnomer there. There is a small increase. Part of that is due to a $50,000 increase in Medicaid revenues that we believe we're going to realize, and I'm going to talk a little bit later about how that comes about. But the actual revenues have reduced a little, but we think we have a new revenue source that's going to put us in the positive. And that shows you the net local when it's all said and done. Okay. Now we're into our non-mandated budget. I'm going to ask you to bear with me on this slide. We're going to have to get it updated for you. The revenue in the 2011 modified column is not accurate. When we made the moves from the budget document into the slides, some of the CHA dollars were not transferred appropriately. And so that positive $309,000 in revenues will be a negative number once we make the corrections. The total on the next slide, we believe, is accurate. So it was just an issue with this particular slide. But looking at our expenditures, what you see there is essentially fringe benefit increases for our staff. And so that's the 2.3% change in expenditures. Our revenues have gone down. We've seen about $300,000 in reductions in state aid. Most every program that we get state aid in saw a reduction or an elimination in funding. So there was a significant reduction there. We've been able to mitigate some of that with some moderate fee increases. Both our vital statistics program as well as our environmental health programs have proposed fee increases to help offset some of those losses for us. So we will get you the updated number so that's completely accurate. If you could show me the totals. Oh, and please remember the CHA is the full CHA for 2012 is included in all of these slides, and we'll talk a little bit about that later on how we're dealing with that. So you see our total, the expenditure reduction, the revenue line is what we believe is accurate, so we will see a reduction in revenue of about $121,000. So that shows you the net local change in our total budget.
I'm sorry, clarify, what do you, you said about the chat, it's included?
Yes, what we did, you'll see one of our OTRs is the full funding for 2012 of the CHA. The reason that we did that is because we don't know exactly when that transaction will be completed through the year, and so we want to make sure that the dollars are there to carry us all the way through. The expectation is that any sale cost, any sales revenue that we might see would offset any county cost for that for next year.
Just to amplify on that, it's funded with one-time money, so it doesn't have any effect on our property tax levy. The expectation is that use of one-time money, that will be replenished when the sale proceeds come in, so it's not affecting tax levy.
Isn't there a contradiction between these last two slides? One was a 3.9% reduction and the other was, I forget, 7.8% that was recommended? Or did I miss something?
No, the revenues in this particular slide are not accurate under 2001 modified, so that whole line across will not be accurate. Yeah, so we're going to have to correct that slide. We believe the budget, the total budget, which is the next one, that is what is accurate as far as our change.
And that's the combined mandated and non. This is a consolidated slide that picks up both of the two earlier slides.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, that's our total budget there. Our full-time equivalents, you see there's a small change noted there, but of course the full 15 positions related to the CHA are still in our budget as we're still operating the home care agency. Okay, these are our first set of OTRs that are supported by the property tax cap. What you'll see as a priority one was our effort to get to the 2% tax cap, and it would have required us to reduce additional positions beyond the CHA. So those are there, and they're included under the property tax cap. Now, you'll see the second priority was full funding one time for the home health agency, and so that's there again with the expectation that it is one-time cost and it would be offset by any sale price that we received. The third priority is to use rollover dollars for some equipment purchases. We have essentially, those are things that we would need, computer updates that we were able to take out of our target and put into one-time rollover costs, so that helped us with our overall budget. And we still have a large amount of rollover dollars left, and part of the reason that we're reserved in using those is our state aid reductions that I was talking about. Some of them are hard to project for next year. Environmental health, for example, not only did they reduce the state aid that they're giving us, they're changing the way that they're accounting for the time that we spend in those programs. So we can't go back in time and look at what we would have used in hours to make an apples-to-apples comparison. So we've done our best estimates here on what those reductions are going to be, and so we're making sure that we have some dollars there in case we were off. Okay. So those are our OTRs under the property tax cap, and I'm going to talk a little bit about our OTR that is over the property tax cap, and that is recommended to be funded by the county administrator. Going back to our Children with Special Care Needs program, I talked a little bit about that $50,000 in additional revenue that we were going to realize, and that is coming from some additional billing for Medicaid within our preschool programs. A couple of years ago, there was some issue about how Medicaid was going to pay those, and there's some lawsuits going on, and so they directed us not to charge Medicaid. Well, that directive has been reversed, and so we're ready to move forward and start realizing those new revenues related to Medicaid. So that's going to do some things to us. You'll see that we're talking about our nurses, first of all, that they're seeing 65 clients while the recommended client load is 45. I don't think that's unique. I'm willing to bet most departments could come up here and tell you they're doing more with less. What's unique in this particular situation is not only are they seeing above the client load, but there have been new rules put in place where they have to make additional contacts to their clients now. So their workload is going to increase. Their client load may stay, you know, similar at this number above the average, but the workload for each client is going to increase as well. Second is the pre-K Medicaid billing that will begin. That talks to our administrative staff. Essentially, the school districts provide the service, but we administer it. And so in order to be able to bill Medicaid for those services, we have to make sure everything is in place to be able to properly bill Medicaid effectively. And so the staff are going to have to do some additional tracking down of documents and making sure that the services are being provided and that the paperwork is being completed appropriately so that we can bill those services. So we've seen those increases in both our nursing and administrative needs within that program, and so we look for a solution. Obviously, we know this isn't the environment to be asking for additional people, so we tried to look at how we could meet the needs without adding additional staff. So our staff within the program are currently 35 hours, and we're requesting to increase them to 37 and a half. Essentially, what that does for us is if we were to bring on a person, we get either a nurse or an administrative staff. We wouldn't get the capacity within both areas. By doing this, it increases our capacity in nursing. It increases the capacity in the administrative staff to be able to do the work, the additional services that are now necessary in order to continue that billing. The administrative portion, we talked about the $50,000 that we budgeted. We expect that that number will be significantly higher once we get that process up and running and be more strong in billing everything that we possibly can. We wanted to be conservative when we put that in, but we do expect that those numbers will increase as we go along through, and we'll end up paying for the significant for the increase in hours for staff. One thing to remember as we were thinking through this process as well, and by increasing in hours and not increasing staff, we also have a savings in fringe, because by adding a person, we add fringe costs. So we were really looking at a way that would build the capacity for us with the least financial impact of what we're trying to accomplish. And if you want to... Probably should have had this slide flip-flop. I apologize. So this is that OTR that I was just describing. The cost would be $64,652, and it would increase their hours from 35 to 37.5 for the Children with Special Care Needs Program.
Okay. Questions for Frank? Frank Proto.
Frank, I'm glad to see you restored the CHA. That makes me feel good. The question or the concern about the children with special care needs and the pre-K transportation with the school district, you said that would be a direct savings, but since the school year has already begun, will we see some of that savings in 2011 as well as, is it for the entire calendar year of 2012? Or for the school year 2011-2012?
Well, we started at the beginning of this school year, so obviously there will be some savings in 2011, but with the expectation that in 2012 you'll have equal portion of two different school years that would equal the total. So for this year, we will see a partial savings. For 2012, we would expect to see the entire savings.
Does the savings for 2011 go into the health department's kitty as rollover?
It's a mandate. It's a mandate, so no, it doesn't. It comes into the general fund.
Anyone else? Thank you, Frank. You're a magician. Oh, Carol.
I'm not quite understanding where Medicaid shows up on our main budget pages, if it does.
Brenda's the finance.
Okay. And while she's looking it up, so our percentage,
Carol, what's your
that's
question
local
about it?
I want to know where it is. That's my question.
Should be in section 3, page, possibly page 161. That page is not numbered.
Is that right? Preschool special education.
Yep, you'll see a line called local revenues, $50,000.
Peter?
Medicaid?
Medicaid is an insurance payment.
Let me do this.
It comes to us as insurance payments.
Okay,
so
and
Medicaid is an expense on when we pay the state of New York. But when we receive Medicaid payments, it's booked as insurance payments because Medicaid is an insurance program.
Okay, so our local share that we have to pay of that is how much and where is it?
Well, that's in budget and social services. Right.
It's in so okay. Right. Thank you.
Peter, someone else had their hand up. Well, go ahead, Peter.
What, did you call on me? Or
I did, yes.
Yeah.
Peter?
On that particular slide, you say it's an over the property tax cap request, meaning that it's going to cost us money, but on the other hand, it's going to be offset by savings. So why is it going to cost us a property tax?
The expectation originally as we created the budget was to put in a small amount of revenue related to that process of billing Medicaid, and that was the $50,000 that we reflected in the budget. We expect that number will push up to $200,000 to $250,000, but we wanted to go in tread lightly, meaning that we wanted to start out, get the process up and running to see where it was without selling ourselves short in the first year. So we wanted to be conservative in our projections on what we would be able to do by implementing a brand new process, not knowing whether or not we would have additional hours to do it. So we were very, very conservative in the estimate.
Okay, but it's your best guess that even though it may be booked this way, it's really not going to cost us money. Is that, do I understand that or not?
May I?
Yes, Joe.
I think what this budget says is with existing hours for employees, we should be able to generate the $50,000 that's in the budget for Medicaid receipts. If you give them the additional hours, we have the capacity to earn more in Medicaid reimbursements. So right now it's shown as zip, but this will give us the capacity and the possibility to earn more of that Medicaid money.
Okay.
Will.
Still on Medicaid, and I don't know if this is Joe or Frank, but still trying to understand. We both pay the Medicaid bill, but we get payment back.
Right.
And presumably, if we are increasing the payment back, the amount we have to pay also goes up. Is that?
Well, Medicaid expenses are capped.
Under the cap,
but the 3%.
So, yeah.
So
we're hitting our cap every year. Anything above that cap,
it's all gravy. Okay. And secondly, just thinking about the impact on the deliverers, are we imposing upon them record keeping that will yet further burden what they do and remove them from direct service?
Referring to the administrative?
The billing. No, whatever we're doing to increase the billing level.
We have administrative staff whose function is billing and monitoring of our programs as they exist. Really what we're asking for here is additional hours for that administrative staff to be able to do the additional tracking down of the paperwork and processing it within, you know, the additional hours that would be provided. So it's not a... It's not work that they're not already doing for the program. It's just an additional service, essentially, that we would be billing for under Medicaid.
Thank you.
Martha.
Yes, I first just really appreciate all the hard work on getting those mandates down. Boy, that's huge, the mandate costs. I'm looking at your rollover amount, and for you expect to have $414,000. How much of a cushion do you need? I mean, what is that? I mean, looks like you didn't use any of it in 2011, if I read this correctly, and are recommending that we use 36,000 in 2012. How much, I mean, can any of that come back to the general fund?
That is a very good question, and being here 5 months, my answer would be, I don't yet know. And a large part of this process of me learning what's happening and understanding state aid and the ramifications that go along with that, it's something that we were looking at it as health department dollars that were there, giving us the opportunity to make some projections that are, you know, pretty conservative in what we think, and wanting to have something there in case these state aid reductions that we really are giving our best educated guess on were significantly different than what we were proposing. So I would ask that, if possible, we be able to go through this year with this type of projection, and if we see, as I learn more about it over the course of the next 6 to 8 months, that the potential exists that we can spend that in other ways, then, you know, I would be bringing that to you for 2013. I will tell you that I am not a big believer in having dollars left in the bank. If there's dollars there, we should be providing public health services with them, and that will be our goal. Just with the CHA changes, with the state aid reductions, there's so much unknown in our budget this year that we really were just trying to protect ourselves and make sure that we didn't have to come back to you as the year progresses.
I'll also comment that the changes that were made in a number of our state aid bid programs were effective July 7th of this year. As of last Friday, we are still waiting for the guidance from State Health Department on how they plan to implement them. And some of the big unknowns is how they're going to deal with administrative spread of our dollars, particularly in planning and coordination, to these programs that are not covered. In addition to the programs that Frank may have mentioned, the Emergency Medical Services Unit also lost all of their state aid that came through our department. Because we don't have guidance, we're having to take estimates based on prior years. So it's very, very difficult for us to even project that. One of the big areas of concern for us this year is in our sewage program, and parts of it may be aided and parts may not be, but they still haven't even worked out those details. And our staff have been doing that work right along, and here it is the end of the third quarter, and we still don't know what is going to be eligible, what isn't going to be eligible. They haven't issued the time recording requirements so that their time can be accurately recorded, nor have they issued the guidance on how to file the state aid claim for third quarter of this year.
Joe. And the third thing on that, from an accounting and policy perspective, that money really is a part of our general fund balance, mm-hmm. and sits there until you say they can use it for their purpose. So David is able to use that for cash flow. It is a part of the general fund balance until you say otherwise. So it's really a
Brian.
Frank.
Yes, sir.
102. How many staff are you talking about?
It's 30. It ends up being 30 hours, so 12
staff?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure I was following correctly. Without it, you plan on generating somewhere around $50,000 of revenue. With this, it could be as much as $200,000. Because the only thing you're really doing is you're adding a half an hour a day to each one of those people, mm-hmm. yet you're expecting a 300% increase on that little bit of time. It doesn't really compute to me. But
yes, it's a half an hour a day. You're correct. What's changing is that we're adding a whole new billing stream for services that we're already providing. So essentially, we're not providing, our contractors, the school districts are providing. What the time is going to allow the staff to do is follow up and process the paperwork that's associated with those services. So we're doing some of it already because the services are being provided. What the additional time allows them to do is make sure everything is in line for us to be able to bill Medicaid appropriately, because what we don't want is to send in paperwork or bill for something that we didn't document appropriately and then have issues with Medicaid later on. So it is a small amount. We know that. And to be honest with you, it's not enough. But it is what we thought we would be able to accomplish with the restraints that we recognize the budget has.
Billy.
Do you know more now compared to when you prepared the budget pages about what DEC might require the Department of Health to do with respect to gas well?
We did not budget anything for gas drilling. And to answer your question, not really. It's moving along, and there's still my understanding that there's requirements for the local health departments to be involved in complaints and those kind of things. But we're putting together our comments as we speak on how we want to respond to that. We're still troubled that there is not a public health official, a local public health official on the committee that is working on it. We have sent letters. The Board of Health has sent letters to that effect. But it is very unknown right now. The staff in Environmental Health know that they will be dealing with this issue. But until it moves forward, we really, to put a dollar figure on it, is nearly impossible at this point.
Thank you, Frank. Welcome to the budget process.
Thank you.
County Administrator.
Thank you. I'm going to boot up our PowerPoint here.
Everyone is really fresh and ready to go. So.
Yeah, including me. I'm going to give kind of a split presentation here. The first part will be on the county administration budget. Second part will be an overview of the capital and debt portion of the budget. My sense is, as we get into capital and debt, you're going to want to spend a little more time, probably not tonight, but later on, going through details of this. But I just want to introduce the capital portion of the budget tonight. So with respect to 2012, you can see that our overall spending is down a little bit, but there's an asterisk there for a reason. If you read the footnote at the bottom, in 2011 and in prior years, my budget has carried the cost of court attendance. And I don't know whether that was an accounting convenience or there was some logic that was behind it when that was first created, but historically my budget has carried the cost of court attendance. And that was really a wash. There were expenses that went along with that function, but also there were state revenues to fully reimburse us for that. I think all of you know that earlier this year, the state abolished court attendance. So for 2012, that's completely out of the budget. So that affects both my expenditures and the revenues in 2012. But when you get to net local, and that's really the number to look for us, you can see that the recommended budget is up by $57,000. That's a little over 9% in terms of percentage increases, and I'll explain how we get to that number over the next couple of slides. Full-time equivalents, and this really explains much of the variation in the budget from 2011 to 2012. You can see how the FTE roster has gone in the administration budget over the past couple of years. Got up to 6.5 in 2010. We cut that down in 2011 by doing a couple of things, going to a half-time deputy county administrator and also making changes within the rest of the staff, brought it down by a full FTE. If we were to implement the cap as the budget is currently written, the budget that I've presented to you, that FTE number would come down further because we would all experience a reduction in work week. That's how we met our cap numbers. However, that's not what I'm recommending. In fact, my recommendation has us going up by half a position, and as you'll see when we get to that OTR, that is to allow us to restore the full-time status of the deputy county administrator. In terms of OTRs within the cap, to achieve the full reduction that we had imposed on everyone else, 11.2, we would have to take our entire staff down to a 35-hour work week and the part-time deputy county administrator even less than that. So we would all have a significantly diminished work week, and that's that would be 35 hours of the deep cut. The OTR that was included within the cap would bring that up to 37.5 hours. So we would still all go from 40 hours to 37.5. Even under the cap. At the cap, again, work week declines across the board. Part-time, that's the deputy county administrator, go to 17.5 hours. A I think all of you appreciate the fact that our workload in the office already exceeds the available hours, so it would put us in a very difficult situation. Specific impact would be a 6.25% salary reduction for all of our full-time staff. It would add to comp time because there are certain things that we just have to do regardless of our work week. It would make it much more difficult to support special projects. It would affect our public information. You know, the PIO is a part of this budget, and it would diminish the ability of us to manage from a central spot. In terms of over-target requests above the cap, and I'm a very beneficial county administrator, I've recommended both of my OTRs. One would restore the entire staff back to where we are right now, which is a 40-hour work week for the full-timers, 20 hours for the part-time. But my third OTR is what I talked about earlier, which is my request to increase the deputy county administrator to full-time status. The footnote below is important. I would propose funding this additional increment of hours in a couple of ways. First, with $10,000 in one-time funds. If your memory is better than mine, you may recall that a few years ago, Mike Kaplink-Alaire raised some money by swimming in the lake and raised $10,000, dedicated that money to county administration to support innovation within county government. We didn't spend it the year it was given to us. It fell into fund balance. So what I'd really like to do is to pull that money out of our reserves and apply it on a one-time basis to support this increase in hours. The second increment of funding would be a proposed $15,000 a year times three-year multi-year funding that would help us really assume executive accountability for the county's efforts to improve diversity and inclusion. So it would be $15,000 this year, but I would ask for a multi-year commitment of $45,000. The balance, which is $42,000, would be supported in target funding. It would affect property taxes. Frankly, my goal would be over time to bring that position into a fully target-funded position, but would propose to use one-time money in the short term to build us there. So in terms of the county administration budget, that is really the long and short of it. And maybe I could take any questions you have on that before we go into capital.
And I have Martha and Mike.
So that $10,000 in one-time funds, you've got $15,000 for 3 years.
Right.
To maintain the level for the deputy, you'd need to add in the second and third years another $10,000 each of those years?
Yeah. I would need to bring it up by 10, correct. That's right, in the next 2 years. And then in the fourth year, if you want to look that far ahead, you would need to replace that $15,000 in multi-year funding.
No, wouldn't you need 25 altogether if to make it all target?
Right, but the one-time money will fade away after this year. So beginning in 2013, we would need to find $10,000 in target money to replace that.
Okay.
And then after 3 years, we would have exhausted that money set aside for the multi-year funding.
Okay.
And then we would need to replace that.
Does this amount include fringe?
It does.
Okay.
Yeah, it's fully loaded on fringe.
Mike, had your hand up?
No. What is the deputy county administrator going to full-time going to be doing for you? It has to do with the plan for the diversity inclusion, or is it other things?
Yes. It really doesn't stop there, Mike, although that's a part of it. I think you know what has been done over the past couple of years in terms of high-level, high-consequence special projects. Broadband is a good example. Compliance is a good example. I would expect more of that. I mean, we want to be able to support initiatives that come out of the legislature, the high-level initiatives, and this would allow Paula to do that. The second area that's really it's been explored, it's been done, but it can be done to a much larger degree, is call it internal consulting on performance management. I think some of you who are in GEO may recall Paula's work with assessment over the course of this year, in looking at performance management, performance measures, and employee evaluation system, really working with that department to help it adjust to a significantly diminished roster and still keep output high. That's the second area where we would be able to use the deputy a lot more effectively and more often with the additional resources. And that's really where that innovation piece comes. The third element is what you just talked about, which is the diversity and inclusion element. And here I think we've all had a realization that there needs to be executive accountability for the goals we've set in those areas. And with this, I think we can assume that executive accountability within the Office of County Administration and work with WDIC, work on the implementation of a plan that is out there and pending, a diversity and inclusion plan out there and pending, to help implement that. So that would be the third element of how I would see these additional hours being applied.
Thank you. Any other questions for Joe Frank?
Joe, are there any other positions within your department that you've considered shifting? I know as I'm looking at page 42, within the cap, it looks like there's that 6% change, or approximately. But some of the responsibilities look like they may have an opportunity to be put someplace else. I'm thinking particularly of the contracts coordinator's position, shifting some of that to the county attorney's office. Is there any thought been given to any of these other, doing something like that?
Yeah, we've explored it, Frank. I won't say in depth, but we've kind of explored that idea at this point at a superficial level about that function moving over to law. It's something that will continue to be on our radar, but in terms of, again, my recommendations in this budget, that is not included. That organizational change is not included in my recommendations.
And the position that you want to restore, it's the one up on this screen,
yes,
is because of some of the projects that are involved in that. I'm thinking of my all-time favorite, the Universal Fund with broadband. There's a possibility to glean some dollars out of that. Is it possible that some of that money can go to offset some of the expense?
Yeah, it's often hard in a grant proposal to pay those kinds of salaries. I don't want to say it's impossible. I think that there are some opportunities that will open up if these additional hours are granted. I think the opportunities may open up. I don't want to oversell this, though. I don't want to say it will necessarily pay for itself with grant monies, but I do think it could open the door for the county to be the beneficiary of additional grant dollars. I mean, broadband is a good, great example of what we can do if we have the right kind of staff support. I think everybody here understands that we've gone a tremendous distance from a concept into something that has great substance to it right now. Right. That might bring grant dollars to this community to achieve those goals. I'd prefer to look at it that way.
Okay. Thanks.
Actually, Frank, thank you for bringing up the contracts portion of it. There was a new hire that dealt with a number of the tourism things that Jackie had been dealing with. Did that free up hours?
It has freed up hours. My concern with that position since I've been here is that there were too many things that were being juggled. Mm-hmm. There was risk management. There was contracts management. There was tourism. It was too much for that individual to handle. So in terms of reallocating that work, the tourism work, to planning, to Tom Knipe. Mm-hmm. My sense is it makes that job more manageable and it can be done very proficiently by that person. It hasn't created idle time. It's just allowed that person to focus on those two core areas, which are risk management and contract management.
Anyone else? Martha.
Section 3, page 54, special projects. I'm trying to figure out where the revenues for 2011, $62,600, came from. And
Special projects was the SMSI, was the health consortium.
Okay.
So the money came from that state grant,
okay,
which is now gone.
Any other questions about...
the next page, it shows tourism support, so there's still a little bit, 4,000 in there.
Yeah, we've transferred most of the money that had come to us for tourism over to planning to help support that position. Still, I'm involved in preparing the budget and various other things, so we're still charging them a little bit for our services.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions about this?
Yeah, Joe, I would be curious to find out what did it cost us as a county. I don't know if this happened for some of the special projects that the deputy county administrator had been doing. What did it cost us in terms of, I don't know, we had to pay extra, or was it all within the time that she has now?
It's mostly through the time she has now. We had to supplement that budget for the compliance program because that was above and beyond. Broadband is really in the base, although we're stretching her 20 hours, so you know. Mm-hmm. She's sitting right behind me, so I won't put a name to it.
Eyebrows are going up.
We're stretching.
As I can't imagine 20 hours.
We're stretching
it,
and we may actually have to come back for a supplement to the 20 hours.
Yeah.
Because it's really important, but it's very consuming. Compliance, we came to the legislature and asked you for additional dollars.
Right.
So
I just want to see what that looks like, because I thought it was a significant amount.
We'll try. We'll try to do that.
Thank you.
Anything else on the administration part? Thank you. Capital and debt service. I don't know how long you want to spend here, how long you want to be here. I would not like to go past 8. If we could do it shorter, that'd be great. Go ahead.
Yeah, and again, this may provoke questions, and I would suggest that we spend the time later to do the questions. But let me just show you what's in the budget. The recommended budget actually has our debt service going down a bit. For 2012, as some things are paid off, so you can see it's going down. What I've called cash capital, which is, as it seems, capital projects funded with operating funds, we have increased by $320,000, and I'll explain why in just a minute. So the total local commitment to the combination of debt and capital is up by about 1%, 1.3%.
Hold on, Joe. Hold on 1 second. If you want to follow along, it's section 2, page 35.
Yeah, I remember.
Thanks. Now they're going to know when I'm not telling them the...
Sorry.
Yes.
These slides break down the two elements of capital into debt and capital versus debt's contribution to debt service. Here again, the expenditures are down by $500,000 as certain things are paid off. But call them revenues, are down by $300,000. Now, revenues are generally contributions from the other funds, like solid waste. If something is paid off in debt service, as debt is incurred on behalf of solid waste, they contribute to it.
Mm-hmm.
When debt is retired for solid waste, that reduces the amount they pay into it, and that's really the revenue number there that's down. So, again, local dollars down by $250,000 for our debt service. Here are the entities that do contribute to that revenue number in debt service. So when you look at those revenues, this is where it comes from. If you ever wanted to see how much comes from each, we can do that for you. But this is the source of those contributions. This slide is the cash capital allocation. And here, this is one you'll want to look at. We've increased the amount in the budget for cash capital by $320,000. There aren't revenues that offset that. These are general fund type expenditures. So the local effect is $320,000. Now that is really completely about a couple of things that we put in for next year. The first, we put $250,000 of cash in this budget to pay for the swap of space between legislative chambers and the courtroom across the way. So we put $250,000 in cash in this budget to support those costs. One of you raised a question the other night about whether that is adequate to handle both the furniture and the walls and everything and electronics.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe yes. We may need a bit more for the electronics. I know Greg said it was all-inclusive. I'm not so sure the $250,000 will be fully inclusive, but we've put $250,000 in there to help cover. We've also put $75,000 in that cash capital budget to pay for, call it, additional master planning for the center of government concept as we try to narrow our options, decide exactly what we're going to do, We're assuming at this point it will require additional, called a master planning expenses, so we wanted to provide for that. So those are in there as well. So those two things together are $325,000 and explain the variation from 2011 to 2012. It's possible, Dooley. It's possible. I'm not so sure the way schedule and time goes. So we've been prudent here, and we put it aside for 2012. There may be some preliminary architectural things too that we would want to do in 2012. In terms of new debt-supported projects for next year, I've listed them here. You can see there's a couple of bridge projects. You talked to Bill earlier about bridges. We have assumed that we will go forward with the two bridges that John Lantman has identified. We will pay for those with debt. So there are a couple of bridge projects assumed that will be debt supported for next year. And then there's some building projects. And we have two columns there because when we put the budget together, we basically held the place for a number of these things. Since then, some things are coming into focus, and I'll go through those, and it'll take me 1 minute to do it. The Human Service Annex, it's really $1,350,000. That's the same from budget to update. We need to provide for that. The Deferred Maintenance Program, that's the $800,000 a year program for the next 3 years. That's not changed, still at $2.4 million. The relocation of the Community Justice Center, when the budget was being built, we were assuming $2.4 million for that. What we've learned from our consultants at Holt is that if we were due to a standalone community justice center, they think a planning number should be $1.5 million. So we've adjusted that. At the same time, that same analysis is indicating that a center of government project, even on a very small scale, should be the bump out of Building C for planning and ITCTC would cost in the neighborhood of $2.3 million. So in terms of the bottom line for these projects, we're still where we were within $100,000 of when the budget was built, roughly the same. Debt service is about $400,000 in the first year. It's lower in the first year because you make one of two payments. It builds up in the second year, so I wanted you to see the second year impact of those programs as well. It's about $800,000. New cash capital projects, I described the middle two, the big ones. There's also, we call it new, the aquifer study at $77,000. This has actually been on our budget for several years. We consider it new. We reconsider it every year. Probably Dooley can explain this project better than I can. And then the TCAT capital, which for this year was extraordinarily small, is $3,400. So in terms of capital projects new to the 2012 budget, there they are.
I'm sorry, what was the cost planning?
That the Center of Government Planning, that again is if there's a need for additional master planning, preliminary architectural stuff before we actually do anything, we'd be provided with that allocation. I think the last thing, because I know you want to see where all this would take our debt service over time, so we blocked out a four-year period. If all of the debt-supported projects were to be approved, this is only debt service, as they come to you as individual projects. So in approving this budget, you're not approving anything in terms of projects, providing for budget support for them. So if all these projects came to you and you authorized debt financing of these projects, our debt service would rise from where it is right now, $4.55 million. We would be adding $380,000 in 2012. It goes to $4.93 million. And you can see how it escalates over that four-year period where it peaks at $5.88 million. So that's a longer-term picture of what this would mean. I think that's
no
it.
No questions.
No questions.
Yeah, well, you know, Dooley and Martha, you each get one question.
Since earlier I made a pitch for the desirability of having another five-year capital program for road maintenance, how big would that be in comparison to the numbers you have here for the next 4 years? Can you do that in your head?
Well, it was $1.6 million a year, wasn't it?
I don't know if that's the right amount.
And that's about.
Well, we've added $8 million worth of debt for those projects, that program. we had an $8 million authorization, and I would caution you not to do that again, because that $8 million is being financed, you know, on 15 years, but the improvements are not going to last necessarily 15 years. And so you get in a situation where you'd be borrowing and borrowing and borrowing for annual maintenance. The more prudent thing to do would be to bond specific projects that are truly truly reconstructions, because where that money went before was it went to $1.6 million of materials that the county used in projects that we did with our own workforce. Wasn't like replacing bridges. So
I know it was not your favorite way for us to approach things, and I don't like paying for ongoing things that way either. It was a catch-up, and I'm asking how much it would change these figures now.
That's well, it's about debt service on 9-6 is probably $120,000. Well, it's 50. It'd be over 15 years. It'd be higher.
Yeah,
it'd be a little more than that, Joe.
Yeah, I think it's 150,000
Marker.
150 per year, escalating. So it'd be 150, then 300, then 450 a year, monthly.
Joe, the center of government, a couple slides back, you've got the center of government, the bump out of building C for planning and ITCTC was $2.3
million. Right.
Does that include anything required to put the legislature and offices more permanently into the old courthouse?
No, it does not.
Carol,
No, it does not. I think that will be an additional. That could be an additional cost. The only number that we put in here is the $160 per square foot times the square footage of the new building. So I know it's only for the planning and ITCTC space. It doesn't include any additional legislative improvements.
Okay, because we talked about this at
right.
Capital Plan. Okay, thank you.
Carol, go ahead.
Yeah, how does this compare to what we had in the 20-year plan for this year?
It is consistent. Actually, that's what the before and after. The original 9.7, I think we pulled out of that capital plan, didn't we? We presented a few months ago at Budget and Capital. Mm-hmm. So that was the origin.
So it's which projects and how much, not the total. Thank you.
Thank you. Joe, you, Mike, you have a question?
I just wondered, Kevin sent us to page 35 and 36 here. Do you have it spread out for more years than just the 2016?
Yeah, I handed that out at Capital.
We used to get it like 10 or 15.
Yeah, I have the 20-year, and I gave it out at Capital Plan, and I have a copy of that in my office. I can
I'd like to have that.
Could we all get that?
Sure.
Can you go to the next slide, please? What is the courthouse relocation?
That's the swap. That's you moving to the old courthouse and them moving here.
Okay, so that's what Martha was asking about. It's not in mid-service, it's the cash capital.
Yeah.
But that's just the cheapo way of us going to the courtroom and sticking offices in the courtroom and leaving planning where it is. The $2.3 million for the bump.
Oh, I understand that part of it. You were asking about, are we included in that 2.3? The answer is no. Is the 250 us?
It is you, but it doesn't include. So if planning were to move out of the courthouse, the legislature staff would likely move down to the ground floor. There would have to be improvements made to the ground floor. That's
right.
What Martha's saying is omitted from here, and she's right. So those subsequent improvements, second wave improvements to that building are not accounted
for. They're not included.
That's
in
correct.
That. Thank you.
Thank you. We are done. We get together again on the 27th. There's a ledge meeting tomorrow, 5:50 budget committee meeting, and September 26th is at 7 p.m., the Community Budget Forum at Public Library.
Jim, on the 27th on my September calendar, it says voting. Are we going to be voting on anything?
I would guess not.
Okay.
That calendar's been updated as well, and it's online with the new itinerary. It's presentation dates. We couldn't cram everybody in 3 days.
Okay. Can we have a printout?